Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily dose of the top stories, debates, and deep dives from the front page of Hacker News. I am Sarah, and alongside me is my co-host, Mike.
Hey everyone, it is great to be here. Today we are covering the top stories from yesterday, May 9th, 2026, and this is episode number 391. We have a really fascinating lineup for you today.
We really do. We are going to talk about a mind-blowing math experiment using ChatGPT 5.5 Pro, a massive update on the Internet Archive expanding into Switzerland, and a potential bombshell for the JavaScript ecosystem with Bun experimenting with a Rust rewrite.
Plus, we will dive into some concerning news out of the EU regarding VPNs and age verification, and we will wrap up with a really interesting discussion on why HTML is suddenly the ultimate power tool when you are working with AI coding assistants like Claude.
Let's dive right into that first story. The mathematician Timothy Gowers posted on his blog about a recent experience he had with ChatGPT 5.5 Pro. And Mike, this was not just asking the AI to write a Python script. This was PhD-level mathematical research.
Right. Gowers was looking at some problems posed by Mel Nathanson in additive number theory, specifically problems about the sizes of sum sets. The AI thought for about 17 minutes, which in AI time is an absolute eternity, and it came up with a construction that yielded a quadratic upper bound. It essentially solved an open problem that previously only had an exponential bound, or a highly complex polynomial one.
And then, just to show off, Gowers asked it to write up the argument as a LaTeX file in the style of a typical mathematical preprint. 2 minutes and 23 seconds later, he had it. He spent some time verifying it, and the math was completely solid. The AI basically realized that by using a more efficient sit-on set, it could optimize the entire argument. Gowers admitted he provided zero mathematical input. He just prompted it.
The Hacker News comments on this were incredibly insightful, especially what this means for the future of research. A user named JWebGuru mentioned that this aligns with their own experience using 5.5 Pro. It is the first large language model that can truly be wrangled into solving tedious but straightforward problems correctly because it traces its own reasoning. But they also pointed out the massive downside right now, which is the cost. It burns through tokens at an insane rate, and for large-scale problems, you have to constantly wipe its context and launch sub-agents to keep it accurate.
That is a great point. It works for a self-contained math proof, but maybe not for validating a massive legacy code base just yet. But there was a deeper, almost philosophical debate in the comments that really caught my eye. A user named PMantra highlighted a quote from Gower's blog about how we train beginning PhD students. Usually, you give them a gentle problem to get them started. But if AI can now solve all the gentle problems, what do the students do?
Exactly. The lower bound for contributing to mathematics is now proving something that an AI cannot prove. Another commenter pointed out that by solving hard problems yourself, you gain insight into the problem-solving process. If you just read an AI's proof, you become a pass-through. You do not really own the knowledge. It is a real crisis for mentorship and skill development in highly technical fields.
It really is. And speaking of highly technical fields and rewriting the rules, let us move to our next story. Jared Sumner, the creator of the JavaScript runtime button, dropped a massive tease on Twitter. He announced that an experimental Rust rewrite of Bun has hit 99.8% test compatibility on Linux.
This caused an absolute earthquake on Hacker News. For context, Bun is famously written in Zig. It has been the poster child for the Zig programming language, proving how fast and capable Zig can be. So the idea of Bun being rewritten in Rust had people losing their minds. There were over 300 comments in just a few hours.
But Jared actually showed up in the Hacker News thread to calm everyone down. He clarified that this is just an experiment. He said his branch originally had over 16,000 compiler errors and couldn't even print a version number. He just wanted to see what a working Rust version would look like, how it would perform, and if it would be more maintainable. He explicitly said they have not committed to rewriting, and there's a high chance the code gets thrown out.
What's wild, though, is that he admitted he did not expect it to work this quickly, and he did not expect the performance to be as competitive as it is. It really shows the maturity of the Rust ecosystem. But typical for Hacker News, the conversation took a massive tangent. People started talking about what other old projects could use a modern rewrite, and someone brought up ngSpice, the open-source circuit simulator that has roots in 1970s Fortran.
Oh, I loved that thread. You had one side saying ngSpice is a nightmare of tangled procedural C code with hard-coded X11 assumptions that desperately needs a modern embeddable Rust rewrite. And then you had the electrical engineers jumping in saying, hold on, that code is hyper-optimized for performance to solve stiff differential equations, and you're not going to easily beat it just by throwing a modern language at it.
It was the ultimate clash of software engineering aesthetics versus hardcore numerical computing pragmatism. But it ties back to Bunn. Sometimes you experiment with a rewrite just to see if the modern tooling can match the raw, hand-tuned performance of the original. We will definitely be keeping an eye on whether Jared actually pulls the trigger on that Rust migration.
For sure. All right, let us shift gears to something a bit more concerning. The EU Parliamentary Research Service just published a paper calling VPNs a loophole that needs closing in their ongoing push for online age verification.
This is a heavy one. Governments across Europe and the US have been expanding child safety rules, requiring platforms to verify ages before showing adult content. Naturally, people have been using virtual private networks to spoof their locations and bypass these checks. Now, the EU regulators are floating the idea that VPN access itself should require age verification.
Which completely undermines the point of a VPN. Privacy advocates are sounding the alarm because forcing users to verify their identity before using a privacy tool creates massive risks around surveillance, and the Hacker News community was extremely vocal about this. The consensus is basically that Think of the Children is the oldest Trojan horse in the book for internet censorship.
A commenter named U8080 laid out exactly how this played out in Russia. They gave a chilling step-by-step timeline. It started in 2015 under the disguise of banning pirated media. Then they expanded the ban list to casinos and vague terrorist organizations. Then they mandated deep pocket inspection hardware at the ISP level. By 2021, VPNs were obligated to filter traffic. And by 2025, the government was heavily degrading all encrypted traffic like WireGuard and blocking major social media.
And another user from Turkey chimed in saying the exact same playbook is happening there. They banned adult sites back in 2008, and now they are banning VPNs and introducing ID verification coordinated with these global trends. It is the classic cat and mouse game, but the mouse is running out of places to hide.
The technical reality is that age verification is incredibly hard to do without destroying anonymity. The EU paper mentioned double-blind systems used in France, where the website does not know who you are and the verification provider does not know what website you are visiting. But even then, if you mandate that at the VPN level, you are essentially killing the open internet. It is definitely a space we need to watch closely, especially as the EU revises its Cybersecurity Act.
Which actually leads us perfectly into our next story, because as the open internet gets squeezed, preservation becomes even more critical. The Internet Archive just announced they are launching Internet Archive Switzerland, a new nonprofit foundation based in St. Gallen.
This is a huge step for the archive. Brewster Kyle founded it 30 years ago, and now they're decentralizing. The Swiss branch is going to focus specifically on preserving endangered archives and, really interestingly, archiving the current wave of generative AI models.
St. Gallen is a fascinating choice. It has a 1,000-year tradition of archiving and scholarship, and they are partnering with the University of St. Gallen on this Gen AI archive project. But looking at the Hacker News comments, people immediately understood the strategic value of this move. A user named Mickey123211 pointed out that the Internet Archive needs to do what Usenet did.
Right, the Usenet piracy model. The idea is that you have a bunch of mission-aligned but legally unrelated organizations distributed around the world. They peer with each other and replicate all the data, but they do not have a technical channel to distribute DMCA takedowns to each other. So if one node gets a legal threat, they take it down locally, but the rest of the global network keeps serving it.
It is a brilliant strategy for resilience, especially considering the massive legal battles the Internet Archive has been facing in the US with book publishers and record labels. By setting up independent foundations in Canada, Europe, and now Switzerland, they are building a distributed, resilient digital library that cannot be taken down by a single court order in one jurisdiction.
There was a bit of skepticism in the comments, though. Some users pointed out that the European branch website looks like a soulless corporate honeypot designed to attract EU grant money. But honestly, if playing the corporate grant game is what it takes to fund 175 petabytes of global human knowledge preservation, you can hardly blame them.
Absolutely. I think archiving AI models is going to be the next big frontier. In 20 years, researchers are going to want to study the exact weights and biases of the early Claude and GPT models to understand how our digital culture evolved.
Speaking of Claude, let us wrap up with our final story, which is a really fun one for all the web developers out there. A user on Twitter posted a blog about using Claude Code, and they called it the unreasonable effectiveness of HTML.
The premise here is that when people use AI to generate documents or explainers, they usually default to Markdown because it is clean and simple. But this developer realized that if you just ask Claude to output raw HTML, the results are incredibly powerful. You get rich visuals, complex tables, inline styling, and interactive elements that Markdown just cannot handle.
And because Claude is an AI, it doesn't get fatigued typing out opening and closing paragraph tags or setting up table rows. It just blasts out perfect HTML. But this sparked a really interesting debate on Hacker News about the human element of coding. A user named TMHRTLY pointed out that by gravitating to HTML, you lose the ability to easily co-author the document with the LLM.
That is the trade-off, right? Markdown is meant for humans to read and write easily. If the AI spits out a massive block of nested HTML divs and you want to tweak one specific sentence, it is a lot more mental friction to dig through the markup to find it. You end up just prompting the AI to fix it for you, which means you are delegating your own voice and tone entirely to the machine.
But the old school web devs in the comments were not having it. They were like, "We've been authoring HTML by hand for decades. It is not that hard. We invented things like Emmet to write it faster. And React JSX is basically just HTML anyway."
My favorite comment in that thread was from someone who took this concept even further. They were building a mobile game and told the AI to write a tool to place blocks in a 3D scene. The AI actually invented its own custom JSON structure to define the blocks and colors. Then they asked it to make a sound engine, and the AI invented a YAML format for defining noises.
That is the latent space magic of LLMs. They're basically incredible translation layers. As long as the problem is shaped like something in their training data, they can hallucinate a perfectly functional domain-specific language for you. But as another commenter warned, it works until it does not. Fuzzy logic only gets you so far before it decoheres, and you realize you actually need rigorous, human-understandable architecture.
It all comes back to that theme we've seen across all the stories today. AI is raising the floor on what is possible, whether it's solving math problems, rewriting runtimes, or generating web pages. But it is also forcing us to figure out where the human actually fits into the loop.
Perfectly said, Sarah. And that is going to do it for us today on HN Pod. Thank you all so much for tuning in and spending your time with us.
If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or colleague. We'll be back tomorrow with another breakdown of the top stories from Hacker News. Until then, keep building and stay curious.